From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. Our mission on this podcast is to help you realize your dreams of doing meaningful work. Here, you'll meet and be inspired by amazing people who overcame great odds. You'll discover what sparked them, how they explored work opportunities, the strategies that they employed to ensure career success, and the actions that they boldly took to make it all happen. You'll also meet esteemed and nationally recognized thought leaders who are helping people like you to develop work skill, experience, and leadership, and seize opportunity from a changing world so that your beautiful work dreams turn into reality. Together, let's turn work meaningful, for meaningful work is the future of work. Today on the Tightrope Podcast, we present the first of our Between the Seasons episodes, during which we will take a step or two back from the style and format of our seasonal episodes, but also explain to you the why of what we do. We will get current with issues that affect people in the workforce seeking meaningful work, but also shine a light on the work that we do on the Tightrope Podcast to make your journey to meaningful work both rewarding and successful. Coming up, we meet with Gresham Harkless Jr. He's the founder of Blue 16 Media, based in Alexandria, Virginia. Gresh is a successful podcaster and media producer. He is also the design lead for our new podcast-centered dansmolin.com website. You will discover why we decided to work with him to refresh our presentation and make your user experience both meaningful and actionable. But before we get to our interview, you might have noticed that our sound has changed, and we think the change is for the better. Today we debut The Tightrope's new theme music. Our co-producer, Carla Fleming, and I selected it to convey a brighter and more hopeful tone, one that aligns well with our purpose to help you across the tightrope to find work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. In addition, we switched our podcast production to a new broadcast quality recording and editing platform that helps us make the listener experience better than ever, and we do hope that you like the changes. But first, it's the first week of 2020, so Happy New Year, everyone. With each new year come our New Year's resolutions. This time last year, Inc. magazine published the survey results of 2,000 people answering the dreaded question, "What is your New Year's resolution?" The survey results did and did not surprise. The top three responses are ones that no one follows for very long. Coming in at number one, or 71%, people want to diet and eat healthier. Number two, coming in at 65%, exercise more. Number three, coming in at 54%, lose weight. The things that came through that we thought were really interesting were the number of people who cited that they wanted to find another job. Number eight on the survey at 16%. When I ran my recruiting business, it was in January, especially early January, when the phone rang most from people we knew, but many others we didn't, who contacted us to find new work and to improve the direction of their careers. And even though the Inc. magazine New Year's resolution survey indicated that just 16% of people answering said that they wanted to find a new job, that's still a lot of people. Nearly 53 million people. And the number of people eager to learn new skills, 26%, represents a larger universe of 86 million people. Not all of the 86 million people are actively in the workforce, but still, that's a huge subset of Americans who are eager for self-improvement. Americans indeed are eager to work, but most of the time, the work that we do is rendered meaningless by some factor. Perhaps it is the result of changing work objectives, a lack of recognition, dropping earning power, new bosses, or a toxic work environment. We do know from the research done by the Gallup organization that 66% of Americans who work, that's over 145 million people, are affected by some degree of meaninglessness in work and career. Let's just tap the brakes there. 145 million people suffer some meaninglessness on the job. If those numbers were applied to a health epidemic, say an influenza outbreak, the full reach of government would shut down our schools, airports, shopping destinations, and public spaces. Hospitals would be turning away patients. The National Guard would deploy to keep the peace. Our economy would grind to a halt. It would be a national calamity, the size and scope of which we can only imagine in movies starring Brad Pitt. But 145 million people in that workplace? We don't often think about work and workplace dissatisfaction in terms of their effects on our health and wellness. But people unhappy at work are not effective. They rust out. They burn out. They cost their companies millions in downtime and sick leave. Worst of all, they fail to live their dreams of doing work that is meaningful. And that, dear listeners, is our heavy lift. Our mission on the Tightrope Podcast is to help people find and do meaningful work, but we will also poke the bear to get our national thought leaders in business, academia, and public service to stop and pay attention so that they reimagine the role of work in society for people doing it to be fully engaged, earn a good living, do it in ways that best suits their needs, and most of all, live their dreams. So thank you for walking the tightrope with us in 2020 and in the years to follow. Please let us know what you think of our podcast, offer up some story ideas and potential guests, or just reach out to say hi. Send us a tweet to @DanSmolin or pop us an email at info@dansmolin.com. We always look forward to hearing from you. Now, our conversation with podcaster and founder of Blue 16 Media, Gresham Harkless Jr. We spoke with him in late December 2019 over Skype from his offices in Alexandria, Virginia. So Gresham Harkless Jr., welcome to the Tightrope.
Awesome to be on the show, Dan. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. So you grew up in the northern Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C. When you were a little kid, what did you dream about being when you were all grown up?
That's interesting. I mean, I think like for most kids, I used to be a complete basketball junkie. So I think Michael Jordan was making his run through the NBA at that time. So I always had the shoes and always wanted to be like Mike, just like the commercial said. So that was probably the first, you know, couple things. But I also found myself to be a little bit of like a computer geek and nerd. So as I grew older, I started to work on computers. I built my own computer. And I always envisioned that I was going to have a computer building business, like kind of like the CompUSA, where you used to be able to go and build your own computer. So I always thought I was going to do something that, something entrepreneurial. And I just wasn't sure, but I know I had a lot of interest related to entrepreneurship for sure.
Oh, aren't you glad you're not building computers now?
Exactly. They got a little bit smaller, so it's a little bit more of a battle.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we want our audience to know that you and your company called Blue 16 Media partnered with my company, the Dan Smolin Experience, to completely reimagine and relaunch our website for career-focused podcast listeners. But before we get into that, I want you to tell us about what you do, because you're a podcaster. What are your podcasts called, and what topics do you focus on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I so basically have two different things, as you mentioned, the Blue 16 Media, with the service we provide for, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners. And then I have kind of like a B2B brand, I call it. And they're all kind of connected, because I always say, like, you want to try to create a platform for the people you want to connect with, your ideal clients. And that's through the podcast. I have a daily podcast called the I Am CEO Podcast, and it's super laser focused around 16 minutes or so that the podcast go live. But I basically interview entrepreneurs and business owners, and kind of in line with the mission for CB Nation is we try to, first of all, provide a platform for entrepreneurs and business owners to talk about their businesses, their services that they provide. But then also we're trying to find and peel back that veil to kind of see what things that these entrepreneurs and business owners do to be effective. What hacks do they use, software, or what are their morning routines, or trying to get an idea of like what advice they would even give their younger business self, so that we can hopefully try to help and make business a lot more successful for everybody involved.
How long have you been podcasting?
I've been podcasting, so this newer podcast about a year and a half, but I had a podcast before that that I did for about a year that kind of came from the blog. So it kind of manifests itself from just recording interviews to actually doing and producing a podcast.
How much work goes into your daily podcast, would you say?
Oh, it's so much. I'm lucky enough to where like I have an editor and I have somebody that helps to schedule, you know, the blog posts. So I have it down to kind of like a science because I have set questions. So it's around I can get it around 5 to 7 hours per week that I spend just in front of the microphone. And I try to do a good amount of note taking while I'm doing the interviews to help, you know, with it being more efficient when it goes live. And then I have like a very kind of in-depth intake system where, you know, I have certain questions. I get the bio, get the headshot all before anybody books their time, and I use scheduling software. But even with that said, now it's a little bit more down to a science and a system, but getting there and doing that process was another kind of battle. So it took some time to kind of get through that and get through the system and leverage the technology as best as possible.
Wow. That's like a production line.
Exactly. It's like a McDonald's for podcasting, right?
I put in anywhere between 10 and 12 hours of prep per episode. And as I told my listeners, last year when we finished our 2018 fall season, I collapsed. I went dark for a really long time because I had nothing left in the tank. That was a really bad mistake, Gresh. I wish you had told me. You shed listenership when you do that, and I didn't come back on until October of this year. So new Dan is not going away. We're going to put out weekly content for the Tightrope, which today's the first example of it, so I hope it goes well. So let's get to the work that you did for the Dan Smullen Experience. When did you start doing website design, especially for podcasters like me?
Yeah, I think it probably blossomed along the same lines as, you know, when podcasting started to become more and more popular. I think it's become more of an accessible platform where, you know, just the cost of technology has become a lot lower, where you can get microphones and you can podcast from your home. And now even with, you know, platforms like Anchor, you can podcast from, you know, your phone. I think that's created more of an influx or an increase in the amount of people who are podcasting. It's not just podcasting, just saying that, hey, I want to, you know, talk about something. It's, you know, coaches, it's authors, it's people that are, you know, throwing events that are having podcasting as a marketing tool. And I think that's really big, the big change. And that's opened up more people doing it. And likewise, you know, we've tried to cater to that audience as well, too. It's just having, you know, podcasters doing. So we've been doing websites, you know, generally speaking, for, you know, last 7 years. I've had Blue 16 Media, but really focusing on the podcasting in the last couple of years, just because there's been such an influx of people doing it.
Well, we're glad to be working with you. So let's talk about the work that you did for us. When we first met you, and you and I were brought together by my coworker, colleague, and co-producer, Carla Fleming, when we first met you, our podcast was hosted away from the website on a streaming service that's usually used by musicians. And it was pretty basic, and our social media, for lack of a better term, was ad hoc. It was disparate. It wasn't all connected together. When you took over the reimagination of the dansmullen.com destination and getting our website to be more podcast-centric, what creative process did you put in place to make that happen, to create a really good user experience for both our listeners and our followers?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's been awesome to have the opportunity to work with you and Carlo, just because I think so many times people will jump into like creating a website without doing, I think, what are the most important aspects, which is actually before you even, you know, crack open the computer, for lack of a better term, or do anything. It's really understanding like what you're trying to accomplish. Cause I think looking, you know, at the site that you had, you know, prior to the existing site now, it was understanding like what you had, what you were experiencing, what you wanted to improve upon from your vantage point, but also for your listeners and the people that you're trying to look for your brand. And I think a lot of times we forget that we're kind of like a reflection of what you as a client are hoping to accomplish. So when you have that kind of vision painted out, we're able to kind of execute and make it as seamless as possible. So those were like why, you know, some of the recommendations that we made as far as changing the site. But I think a lot of it, you know, again, is very much so in understanding, like, you know, who's your average listener, who you're trying to target, what that avatar looks like that, you know, Carla, you know, worked on, and understanding, you know, what level of I guess involvement you would have in like creating the content and posting and things, or who would be doing it, and understanding like what their strengths and weaknesses are and what you would want to and be comfortable in being able to do. So I think a lot of times when making recommendations, sometimes people have things that they love doing, and that's great. But trying to, instead of force feed, like what we're hoping to do, we want to try to make sure that we're creating the best experience for yourself, but also for the people that are going to be listening to the show.
You brought up the idea of avatars, and this is really, really important. You and Carla envisioned two kinds of listeners. One who likes to take a deep dive into information, spends a lot of time reading, a lot of time listening. And then another type of listener who is, for lack of a better term, more mercurial, wants things to get to the point and be brief and be able to get to information quickly. It seems like we were working across purposes, but the three of us actually figured out how to appeal to those two avatars, the person who's more deep dive and the person who's more business brief. How, from your perspective, were we able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just understanding, first and foremost, what their common goals were. And I think that's a lot of times one of the biggest things to do. The person, especially, I think it was Richard the Rapid, was very much so somebody who wants to get to the information as quickly as possible. And when he's able to do that, the best way from a design standpoint is to have the buttons and information that is very accessible to and attractive to somebody that just first goes to the website. So like having the slider on the website, having the images there, because oftentimes our eyes will see before we actually go and read. And I think understanding the person that wants to do more of a deep dive, having it there, like I think so many times people will not have the information there at all because they don't feel like people read, they don't feel like people take in content. But that's why it was so important to get those avatars in the very beginning, because we understood that, hey, we want to make sure that there's snippets or things that are truly attractive to the person that's going to be a lot more mercurial, as you said. But at the same time, that person that wants to do that due diligence and the deep dive, they are able to click through and find that accessible as quickly as possible. And having those balances of those two people allow the homepage especially to not be overwhelming with information. It's super and quick where you can click to where you want to go and do that deep dive if you choose to do so as much as possible.
So as you mentioned, we had Richard the Rapid, that was one avatar, and Victoria the Validator, who is the other. So again, for anybody listening to this who's doing the kind of work that we're doing, creating a website or a user experience, avatars are really important because it helps put a face to a concept or to a type of listener or a type of follower that you might get. So again, to you and Carla, thank you for doing this, because in the end, I think it really enhanced our user experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely say that.
So how do you go about finding new guests every week?
Yes. Yeah, so I have the blog. So I basically have three different kind of, I call them buckets that I pull on. And every, you know, season, I try to have like a different focus of what I want to accomplish. And just like, you know, when I was talking from your perspective, what we were hoping to accomplish, I do the same thing myself. And I try to use my podcast as a way to kind of network, to kind of elevate other entrepreneurs and business owners, but definitely looking to build relationships as much as possible. So I think first and foremost, like, who do I want to build relationships with? So going into, you know, this year now, one of my really big goals was to focus on people in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area. So I basically will go through, you know, Instagram primarily, and really look, well, first of all, if there's people I haven't already connected with, and, you know, asking them to be on the podcast, and people that I have and there's different ways to build relationships. So I might have connected with somebody in a networking event, but I haven't had them on a podcast. So that's a different way to kind of build a relationship and cultivate, you know, that connection. So I look at it from people that I know, but I also go pretty much hashtag hunting, for lack of a better term. Oh. And I look for, you know, Washington, D.C. entrepreneur, or I look for D.C. entrepreneurship, and I just follow those hashtags and I look for entrepreneurs and business owners that are using that, and really try to find, you know, how valuable their appearance on the site might be and on the podcast. And a lot of times with social media, for better or worse, once you go into that dark hole, a lot of times you can find other profiles and you just start to find a lot of other people from that. But that's one way. Obviously, you know, existing relationships, as I mentioned. And then I've had the blog for a long period of time. So I'm always looking for people that have been featured on the blog, and maybe I don't even know what their voice or they look like, just because it's just been kind of a computer relationship. So I try to build relationships by having people on the show because they've contributed to the site as well.
Do you podcast entirely from your office, or have you ever taken your show on the road?
I have taken my show on the road, and I think that I love aspects of both. So this existing podcast, the daily podcast, I don't take on the road. I do it from my home office. And I've done them at different shops for business owners in different places. The thing that I found was, again, because I was trying to build relationships, I wanted to kind of have it like the McDonald's, like the E-Myth, where, you know, there's a process for that podcast. But I still miss kind of like the deeper dive. The Victoria the Validator would definitely appreciate that. So I try to balance between the both of those and have like the daily podcast as the basis, and then doing some more experimental, like deeper dive conversations later on, and bringing that back out. Or I'll go, you know, face to face and have those interviews, because I think there is definitely value in being able to do that. But I think you also have to understand like what your goals are, what your resources are as far as time and energy and getting, especially around this DC, Maryland, Virginia area.
I asked that question, and you bring up experience, because the experience of interviewing somebody face to face is phenomenal. You see how they react to you, and they, how you react to them. And it brings out some really interesting and surprising elements in the podcast episode. The downside of doing face-to-face is when you travel. Mm-hmm. So boys and girls, when you travel with your podcast equipment, make sure that you know that TSA is probably going to rip your stuff apart in the airport, which is what happened to me a couple of weeks ago. But that's part of the game, so to speak. So I'm curious to know what you think is on the horizon for 2020 for podcasters like us. One thing I've heard from our hosts of Blueberry is that Facebook might become more podcast friendly. Have you heard that? And have you heard any other things?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be very surprised if, you know, the Facebooks of the world, especially Facebook, who owns Instagram and owns, you know, WhatsApp and so many different platforms, isn't going to realize like how advantageous, you know, podcasting is. I think if you look at a platform like Spotify, they purchase, other platforms as well too that do podcasting. So I think you're going to start to see, as these smaller, more, I guess, innovative things come about in the podcasting world, that you're going to see the Facebooks, the big kind of tech companies that are understanding how important it is. Because I think if you kind of take a step back and you look at Facebook and you look at what it's really about, it's a connecting tool, and it's a way for people to create content and create information, but there is just kind of walled off, for lack of a better term, where you pretty much do everything within Facebook. So because podcasting is becoming so popular, it's becoming kind of a necessary thing in running a business, where you want to have a podcast if you're an author. You're going to see, I think, Facebook and other platforms start to incorporate that in its own way, and that might be it adding it in. But I really think their first thing that they're going to probably do is try to purchase companies that are really doing it well and have that community, and then bring those two worlds together. Because I really believe that is going to be the big gap that's kind of missing in the podcast world, is that community piece. I think it's still kind of broken as far as like how podcasts can be found and how they're searched. And I think that there's going to be a big player like a Facebook that has that community already and wants to bring podcasting there so that it's a lot easier to find the podcast, a lot easier to find that information. Or, of course, you know, Google, who pretty much, you know, has all indexed the entire as much as possible of the internet.
So you mentioned an interesting word, broken, which is sort of my experience at the end of the day. You know, to build a podcast and create a really good storytelling experience is exhausting and exhaustive. You know, as I mentioned, 10 to 12 hours per episode goes into concept to stream, and it's a lot of work. That doesn't leave any time for the really necessary element of social media. How do you balance your time to make sure that social media are working properly for you to promote your podcasts?
So I have a team that definitely helps out, of people that help out as far as like spreading out the podcast. But I also try to do a really good job of also educating and hopefully empowering the guests as well, too. And by empowering, I mean everything from creating kind of biteable shareables that they can send out. Doing my best to also tag people, you know, when they are featured on the podcast. Cause I think, and I found this out, you know, years ago from the blog, you know, and I approached like kind of the blog and everything from a journalistic mindset. And I found very quickly that a lot of times we all are doing really phenomenal things and we want the world to know what it is that we're doing. And sometimes we're not going to just, you know, stand on the mountaintop and say, hey, I'm doing X, Y, and Z. But when you're featured on a podcast or you're featured on a blog and somebody tags you, often you'll share it out and say, hey, look where I've been featured. So I think that's one of the big aspects is, of course, you know, it does take a lot of time to do it yourself. But I think also understanding that maybe people may not know how best to share as well, and they're looking for ways to do that and do that easily. So if we can kind of empower, you know, our guests and the people that are on our shows or featured on our platforms to be able to do that, I think it makes it, you know, so much better and easier for us to get our name out and for us to kind of hit that awesome V word, the viral word that we're trying to do.
That's one thing that I'm trying to do with these in between the seasons episodes, is sort of break the fourth wall and be more of a teacher to our audience to say, here's how you get the most out of it. But, oh, by the way, help us out, too, by getting the word out and extending the viral nature of what we do. So that's good advice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we sometimes forget, like, we sometimes think we take our gifts for granted and we don't realize that because we know how to do it, that everybody else knows how to do it. So we have to kind of take that step and do that.
So let's take a step back and talk about my playground, which is meaningful work. What makes the work that you do for yourself and your clients meaningful?
I think that when I was, you know, trying to figure out I grew up in Northern Virginia, I went to school in DC, and I never felt like I really understood like where I fit in. And I think that's one of those processes that takes time to do. And I think that for me, I found a lot of peace and kind of a home feel from being around entrepreneurs and business owners. And, you know, I had like kind of seeds of those planted, as I talked about, you know, when I was younger. But it was when I was interviewing entrepreneurs and business owners and asking them, what and why did you start your business? What is your business? What inspires you to do it? What impact are you making? That I started to begin to find my place in what I wanted to do. So what really inspires me is the opportunity to really bring light to people that I feel like are doing awesome things and maybe don't necessarily have as many eyeballs or people that are able to be accessible to it. So like getting to work with you on a project, on your project and all the awesome things that you're working on was really inspiring work for me, because I saw the awesome things that you were doing and I just knew that I had some skills that could probably help to bring light to all the awesome things that you're talking about, the people that you're featuring, the topic of work, which I think so many times we forget how, you know, valuable it can be, you know, in our society. So I think bringing light to that was something that I try to put myself in as much as possible. And when I can use my skills to showcase all the awesome work that you're doing and so many other people, I feel like I'm really hitting that fulfillment level.
You mentioned entrepreneurism. You're a millennial, right?
Correct.
I think your generation, and especially my daughter's, she's Gen Z, those cohorts are going to be by want or by need more entrepreneurial, I think, because work has changed considerably. And if you want to do something, oftentimes you have to become an entrepreneur. So, in that spirit, what advice would you give to somebody seeking an entrepreneurial path to doing work that's meaningful?
Absolutely. I think first and foremost, the entrepreneur is the doer. So I think so many times we get kind of caught up in making sure that everything's perfect before it goes out. But I think one of the things that really the entrepreneur does is always has that ability to continue to innovate, to continue to make things better. So it starts out maybe not perfect, and then it continues to get better for that. So I think if you have a vision, you have a goal, or you have something that you think that you want to do, I think that's the best way to do it. And you'll learn so much by just taking action and then kind of checking to see how things are and gradually improving that mousetrap, so to speak. And I think that goes, very, very far. But I think one of the things that I don't feel is actually done at really any stage of life, really, is you have to kind of have the exploration part where you get to kind of understand yourself more than anything else. Because I can easily tell you that this is what I love doing, but that won't necessarily be what somebody else's gift or what they should necessarily or what their calling is, I should say. So I think you have to do that kind of inner work and that inner exploration into who you are, what makes you tick. And again, a lot of times for me personally, I went back to when I was younger, and when I looked at some of the things that I did, I had kind of traces of what I was doing now then. And that helped me make the decision about, hey, this is maybe what you're called to do because you did it when you were young, when you really didn't have a reason to do it other than you must just love to do it. And I think that when you do that exploration and you try to figure out should you go left or should you go right, a lot of times if you have that kind of awareness of yourself, then it's going to make it a lot easier to kind of make those decisions at the fork in the road.
That's some sage advice and insight for our listeners. Gresham Harkless Jr., thank you so much for walking the tightrope. One last question. If somebody hearing this wants to learn more about Blue 16 Media or your podcasts or the things you do on social media, where would they find you?
Absolutely. I think the best place to go to is iamgresh.com, and it has a landing page to everything, but you can always go to blue16media.com as well and cbnation.com. Those are all kind of backlinked to each other, so you'll be able to find me easily from there.
Well, thank you for joining us today. I hope we get you back on soon.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Our thanks go out to Gresham Harkless Jr. from Blue 16 Media for walking the tightrope with us. Links to his social media are included in the show notes for this episode. On the tightrope, our success is your success, but we cannot build our community without your help and support. So if you haven't done so already, please join the Dan Smullen Experience to get our newsletter offering information, tips, and hacks to help you succeed in doing meaningful work. To sign up, simply click the Subscribe to the Dan Smullen Experience newsletter button on our homepage at dansmullen.com. Fill out the short form, then click the Subscribe button at the bottom of the page, and you'll be on your way. Also, become a regular listener of the Tightrope with Dan Smullen podcast. You can easily find current and past episodes by keywording the Tightrope with Dan Smullen wherever you get your podcasts. And please show your support on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can locate our social media buttons at the upper right corner of our web pages at dansmullen.com. From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smullen. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone. Happy New Year!